Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
This is Jeff Ruth, all about safety and stabilization, and AppSats wants that for you. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, normally reaching you from Indianapolis, Indiana, but today I'm in Florida. So I am looking at palm trees, which are absolutely my favorite tree, and blue skies. And, you know, I don't mean to rub it in because everybody's got different weather. We had 60 degrees in Indianapolis last week and then snow all this week. It always changes. But here's what I want you to think about. I want you to be able to, if you will, look at your life despite all the chaos and all the issues and all the problems, and I want you to say to yourself, what can I do to keep it in perspective? Even though there are lots and lots of reasons to feel as if your life is in a shambles. The truth of the matter is it's not, because you have you. And part of trauma and drama is standing strong based on who you are. I am so excited that you are working on yourself. You know, it was a mission of mine to get you to be able to know your strength despite the tragedy. Because let's face it, when this happens, whether you're 3 days into discovery or you're 3 months, 3 years, or 30 years, you have to be able to depend on yourself and you have to know what your strengths are. That's post-traumatic growth. As a matter of fact, I am so excited because my guest today is Dr. Tia Dayton, and she is an expert that comes out and from the Meadows. You've probably heard of the Meadows. They are the sister treatment center to Gentle Path, and Gentle Path is a facility that houses men with severe sexual addiction. And Dr. Dayton has been on NBC and CNN, and she's been on Montel and Ricky Lake and John Walsh and Geraldo, and she has been a specialist for many decades on trauma and on post-traumatic stress and on all of the normal reactions to crisis. She has written 15 books, Neuropsychodrama and the Treatment of Relational Trauma and the ACOA Trauma Syndrome, How Childhood Trauma Impacts Adult Relationships, Emotional Sobriety from Relationship Trauma to Resilience and Balance. Oh, she sounds like she is a woman right up my alley, because I do believe that we have to work through trauma and grief and then, you know, figure out how we are going to adhere to a process that helps us move on. And she really is an expert in trauma. As a matter of fact, she's going to talk to you a little bit about her life, her childhood trauma. Interestingly enough, I got a hold of her when I was reading some of the information she was putting out in the world of addiction to clinicians and coaches and clients about how to handle the new year and how to stay sane and how to stay positively motivated, right? And I'm all about that, because what I know to be true is that, yeah, when you're dealing with sex addiction and you are a betrayed partner, you have to be safe first, but then you have to get through the grief, the anger, the mourning, the loss. You've got to get through that stage to get to the other side. And for some of you, you were doing that and then COVID-19 hit. And from there, you thought, oh, my gosh, how am I going to make this work? How am I going to have my husband be with me 24/7? Or what am I going to do to cope with more isolation and more depression because my life has so dramatically changed? And that's when I say, you know what? What you got to do, most definitely, is figure out a way to reframe all this. And that's what we're going to hear about today. Dr. Tian Gayton is going to be with us later in the show. So, if you are wanting post-traumatic growth, if you are wanting to get through the three stages of partner betrayal, move through them and move out of them. And I wish that I could tell you, get my workbook and we'll make that happen. And 90 days later, you will be cured, because you won't. But I do believe you've got to focus on empowerment. You've got to get back on your own two feet. You've got to stand strong. And for that, I wrote a book called Unleashing Your Power. And Lori Hall, the president of APSATS, wrote that this book is a game changer. It's deeply respectful and full of practical exercises to help heartbroken women find their way back to themselves. And so if you're wanting a catalyst, get the book. And if you're wanting more of a catalyst, I want you to contact me at Carol at carolthecoach.com, because we have a workshop coming up on May 1st from 9 to 1 Eastern Standard Time that is affordable and that will help you get to know yourself again. This is a much needed area of expertise. How do you move through complex trauma and create your new life, whether it's with him or without him? And so hopefully, I know I had another colleague tell me it was ambitious and encyclopedic. And I thought to myself, what the heck is encyclopedic? I mean, I know what that word is, kind of, sort of. I think he was saying that I had included everything you needed to know. Give me the facts, right? So again, that's Carol at carolthecoach.com. email me, say that you were listening to the show, Betrayal Recovery Radio, and we'll get you the flyer and get you all set up. Because, you know, everybody at APSATS is so wanting to help you to heal. We get your pain, and if you're an addict listening to this show, we know that you want her to heal. I mean, the majority of men that I work with really want their wives to heal, and they want to be a part of it. They just don't know how. And so that's obviously why I wrote Help Her Heal, because I really believe they need that information. They need to be spoon-fed. And I just want you to know that being that we're specialists, we have been trained to understand trauma and stress responses and brain science. And, you know, what I know is when you know better, you do better. And that goes for you, but it also goes for me. When you do work with enough women and men, you know, my specialty is couples. I love working with couples. When you get enough under your belt, you see what works and you see what doesn't. And it's kind of like parenting, you know. You may have four kids, and each one of them is a little bit different, and they respond differently to your parenting requests and your disciplines and your consequences. And that's the same with partner betrayal. You know, I was telling a woman a few weeks ago that she presented in that 10 or 15% of my caseload that is extra specially traumatized. You know, and that's not saying anything about her. It just means maybe she is an especially sensitive person. Maybe her intuition has been so damaged by his abuse and neglect and addiction that she hasn't been able to get back up and see the forest for the trees. And maybe her brain is still offline, or maybe it has to do with something that happened to her early on. But when I said that to her, she kind of gasped, because she said, I don't want to be in that 15%. And I said, I don't want you to be either. I think we need to work extra special hard on encouraging your own sense of strength so that you have that to counterbalance what has happened to you and what continues to happen to you. And she thought about it, and she thought about the trauma, and she said, you're right, I need more skills to detach from his craziness, stand on my own. And so for that reason, I'm really excited to have Dr. Tian Dayton talking to us today about trauma and about things that have knocked us over, like COVID. And she knows what it's like for you to have to deal with sex addiction, and she knows what it's like for you to have been betrayed. And for that reason, she wants to help. And so, you know, this show is all about post-traumatic growth, getting you to the next side, and finding experts who can explain all about trauma. So Dr. Dayton, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. Thanks for joining the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Carol.
Well, yes, I mean, we are so excited to have you, because you have done everything. You've been everywhere. You have just been an encyclopedia, if you will, for people that needed to know how to handle stress and trauma and childhood wounds. And so I was wondering if you could tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure. The reason I know so much about trauma is because I grew up myself in an addictive, you know, my father died of alcoholism, and my family really was traumatized. Not only because of his alcoholism, his sex addiction, and all of the everything that got going around it, you know? The kind of thinking and the feeling, the distortion, the mistrust, the disappointment alternating with hope, all of that kind of thing. So when I, as I grew up, I had that, I used to want to write a book in my 20s called A Sense of Loss, because I just carried a sense of loss. Even though my life moved on, I would say I thrived, I got married, I have two beautiful kids. I mean, all of my adult life has gone very well, but I carried this sense of loss. So when there was such a thing as an adult child of alcoholics in about 1980, I jumped on board and learned what I could, and then the trauma literature started flooding into the field around 85. And that's when the penny dropped. It, you know, I really understood that if you experience childhood trauma, it can go, the effects can really go underground, lie dormant, and be re-triggered when you re-family. Because it's family trauma in your primary attachment relationships, it tends to get re-triggered when you create your own set of attachments in adulthood, when you partner and parent.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So you lived it and you learned about it, and now you're paying it forward by helping other people that have been through so much. And I, before you got on the show, I was saying, as if it weren't bad enough that the partners are dealing with their husband's sex addictions and working through safety and stabilization and grieving and mourning and getting in touch with their anger. I know you do a lot of psychodrama, and so do I with partners. And so I really believe that experientially they can work through some of this. But COVID came around, and it just threw them back again. You know, it was like life was certain, and then it became more uncertain. And I want our listening audience to know that you have even written a workbook that you are giving away free called Maintaining Emotional Sobriety During COVID-19. What made you write that workbook?
You know, when this whole thing hit, when we really realized COVID was a problem in March, last March, I realized that we were in for a mental health tsunami. And so I thought, what can I do to help? All of the senior fellows at the Meadows, for example, did lectures. We understood, and I understood that, listen, I know not a lot about trauma. I can talk to people and at least try to get them to know what to do to stay safe within their own homes. None of us knew what was going on, but I knew how to handle it probably better than most. So we were all disseminating this information. But I thought that's not enough. And, of course, being a psychodramatist, as you clearly are, I wanted to do something more experiential. So I wrote a workbook, you know, fast, immediately, so that I could help people not just know in their heads what to do, what was coming, but process the feelings that were coming up. Because if you are a kid with childhood trauma and you're now an adult, or if you are someone with this kind of family trauma, then the uncertainty and the conflicting opinions, the sense of gloom and doom, the hope and then alternating with anxiety, all of that re-stimulates, it recreates what you grew up with or what you're living with. So that's the bad news, and the good news is that it re-stimulates what you grew up with or you're living with, because I honestly think that one of the gifts of COVID is that trauma tends to hide in, you know, secret places within us, and we don't talk about it. We don't even feel it unless it's pressed on, you know, unless it gets triggered, and COVID has been one enormous trigger, right? I mean, so that if you can tolerate what's getting triggered and use it and mine it for information about yourself, then you can use this period to grow from, you know, if tragedy doesn't strike.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I know is what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And so sometimes you may be struggling, perhaps with partner betrayal. That's what this show is all about. And then when COVID happens, it catapults you to look at life differently, and you're able to find some resiliency that you didn't even think you had. But it is up to us, all of us individually. I am a mental health therapist of 41 years, but I'm also a coach, and I believe that we're 100% responsible for our behaviors and how we handle life. And that's what I thought your workbook was all about. It's helping people not only to get through COVID, but to get through all the stressors in their life. I was really impressed with it. I cannot believe you're offering it free. I'm going to tell my listening audience that if you go to www.meadows.h.com/COVID-19, you can scroll down, hear some free podcasts about it, and get this workbook for free. I mean, it's just an amazing resource, and you've had to have had some good response from writing this kind of thing.
You know, I have. A lot of people have asked me to talk on it, to do, and oh, by the way, if they go on my website, I also have videos that introduce each chapter. I wanted to really guide people through. So TianDayton.com has videos right up front that will guide you through each chapter, and the Meadows has a lot of resources. So
go to your website and get videos that help to explain the resource.
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. I really want to make it easy for people because I really do want to help. I think it's just what you're touching on. We can take charge of this, you know. We can take charge mm-hmm. of how we experience this. We can decide to learn from it. We cannot lay a narrative on this that's a doom and gloom narrative. We can look on the bright side like every day. And we can, suit up and show up. We can use this time to strengthen ourselves because the truth of it is, what's the other choice, you know, to use it to dig yourself into a hole. So that's no alternative, really. And I'm with you very much, Carol, on being the driver of our own bus. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes you'll have clients who talk about all the things that are happening in their lives and their relationships and here as if they aren't part of it, you know, as if there mm-hmm. is no co-action there. And that's, there's a mistake in that kind of thinking. And trauma does create a kind of a helplessness. That's that feeling that can do nothing. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, I absolutely believe it. And let's face it, you and I both know that initially it hijacks the brain. And, you know, it forces the amygdala to go into fight, flight, or freeze, and then it affects the limbic system, and pretty soon that prefrontal cortex is offline. But after a while, that's when women can figure out what does help their safety and stabilization and how can they put more of that in their lives so that they help their brain go back online. And that's what your workbook talks about too. How do you empower yourself to feel better about your life?
Well, journaling does have that benefit because, as you say, when we're traumatized, scared, you know, terrified, really,
mm-hmm.
the thinking mind shuts down, but the limbic world keeps going. So we are left with this record of events that is sensorial and emotional because that's what the limbic system does, process emotions and sense, you know, data. But there's no storyline because the thinking mind didn't make any sense of it. So when this pain gets triggered, it does become overwhelming for some very understandable reasons. And because we've never thought about it and made sense and right-sized it, we get overwhelmed by it. We feel like a failure. We feel, here it is again, but I can't even think. I can't even climb out of this. So that the slow and easy thing of journaling, of just shifting the unconscious hidden material to a conscious level through words, translating the feelings into words, letting them fall onto the paper just as they wish. And then the thinking mind, what happens, it becomes the same sort of thing as meditation. The witness, the thinking mind, starts to wake up a little and make sense of events. So even though what you'll journal may pour forward and feeling senseless, don't worry about it. Let that stuff just come out, because you will observe. You'll lean into your thinking mind. You don't even have to do anything. It will do it for you. If you can tolerate the feelings and let them come up and come out through words, and it's much easier to tolerate them if you can write about them. Because if you're angry, you can write in an angry voice. If you're hurt, you can write in a sad voice. But all the time you're doing that, your thinking mind is coming back on board and making sense of it. And then you can reread it and make sense again. And so that is it becomes meditative. It becomes a way to understand yourself and your experience. And then, of course, you start to order it. And then you're really healing yourself. You're putting words on your experience. You can reflect on your experience. Most people, if they're listening to your podcast, want to heal. They're not here to be, you know, they're here for information to get better. So half the work is already done, if not more. Just let the feelings out and don't worry about it.
So here you are, a woman, a doctor who advocates for doing a lot of self-reflection and really breathing into what thoughts, feelings, and beliefs are coming up for you, no matter what the trauma. And then you also are an expert at doing psychodrama to reenact, if you will, the experiences you've had in your life, too. Can you tell our listening audience what psychodrama is?
Yes, psychodrama is a role-playing method. All role-playing that you see issues from psychodrama at some point. It was developed by a man called Jacob Levy Moreno in turn-of-the-century Vienna, a very interesting creative period in history. Montessori, Freud, all of that creative, curious world. Psychodrama works with roles, for example, and it's perfect for trauma because, as we've just discussed, if I say to somebody, well, tell me about your trauma, they'll look at me dumbfounded. You know, they won't know what to say. So I don't want to put words in their mouth. I don't want to, but of course they don't know what to say. They haven't processed it yet. So we are asking them, when we ask them to put words too soon, to make it up a little bit, to grab at straws, to be, they haven't had the experience to knit these limbic memories, let them surface and put words on them one at a time so that they start to make sense to the mind, so that you knit the fragment and parts of self back together. And how do you do that? Okay, so if you're sitting in your room and there's an empty chair, what part of you do you want to put in that empty chair and talk to? Who do you want to put in that empty chair and talk to? So we don't talk about. We're not saying, tell me about. We're saying, what do you want to say to that part of yourself? What do you want to say to that person? And it comes flooding out. And then if I'm in the room with them directing them, I might say, I just say, what do you want to say? People know what they want to say. In fact, they know, they really know what they want to say. They just haven't been confident enough to say it oftentimes. Or they feel, sometimes people feel they make it up. Sometimes feel they're taking up too much space. Sometimes they feel like they shouldn't sound like this, you know, sound this angry. So psychodrama gives permission for all of that. And then you can reverse roles, which is, you know, phenomenal. You know, okay, so now sit and become that part of yourself and talk back, say, from the hurt part, talk back from the betrayed part to yourself today, to yourself in this other chair. And people, by going back and forth, start to heal themselves, because you give it, you concretize it, we call in psychodrama, you embody and enroll it. And what that means is the thinking mind gets to watch before it's asked to reflect. It gets to watch the drama unfold. That part of, that same part of your mind that watches while journaling watches as the psychodrama goes, that the words come pouring out. And people truly, honestly know what they need if you keep the room, the process moving, the process safe.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm glad you said that, because the truth of the matter is, as a coach, I believe that all the answers lie within. And they don't mm-hmm. believe that, but you give them a process like this, one of two things happen. I find that either, you know, you said things just start coming out, and that's because the body does keep score, and the body knows that it's time to release some of this stuff. And yes. oftentimes as kids were not allowed to show these feelings, and they had to be quiet. They had to do what they were told. And so they've had, women and men have had years and years and years of suppressing these feelings. And this is what I was going to say to you, because I so love psychodrama. Oftentimes you'll be yelling at your husband, and then all of a sudden you're yelling at your mother, because it, all those pains link to each other, don't they, Dr. Staton?
Yeah, you nailed it. It's a projection or a transference reaction, and psychodrama makes that so clear, because when that starts to happen, you say you're yelling at your husband, then you can just say to the person, who could play your father, right? Because they're in the room. Or you might, I don't mean I would lead the protagonist, but it becomes so obvious. You're not leading them. You're going with what they're giving you. And then once you concretize it, the mind gets a picture of, wait a minute, that's this husband in this chair is not my father in that chair. These are two different people. I learned how to read the world through my relationship with my father or my parent. I have this trauma lens, and I am layering that lens and that read, and some of what I'm interpreting from my husband is yesterday's lens, you know? So I'm not seeing him today. I'm seeing him from my trauma mind. And that trauma mind, also remember, if it's childhood trauma, is very young, and it's very defense oriented, and it can feel very hurt, very small. You know, it's why when we get into these fights, we sound so immature, because this stuff is coming up, but we're really yelling at somebody else. We're a kid yelling at a dad, and we need to work our way to being a partner yelling at a partner, you know, so that there's some more equality. And so that, you know, in addition to feeling like a kid yelling at a husband, we make ourselves young again and give the, you know, our husbands huge, right? I mean, they're, mm-hmm. they feel more powerful to us than they actually feel vis-a-vis us in real life. Because we are, if it's a transference, we're layering, we're just a little kid talking to a big, tall person. But we return to that ego state when we transfer without awareness. And we talk from that little kid place, that wounded place. So one of the things I like to also do in psychodrama is say, so talk to your, if you're that inner child, that wounded child were sitting there, what would you say to them? So then you start to separate out the wounded child, because otherwise people talk from this wounded place. And they want to be understood, right? But they're not going to get understood, because it's the wound talking. It's the childhood wound talking. And you need a therapist to understand that, or a very understanding spouse. But most spouses want you to act like an adult. And then probably your husband's doing exactly the same thing. So then we're in a real mess, right? We're just two kids fighting.
Well, absolutely. And you don't know anything about me, but one of the books that I wrote was called Help Her Heal, an empathy workbook for sex addicts to help their partners heal. And although I think women can heal on their own with the help of support, But if a man can learn empathy and learn relational skills to help that process along, that is instrumental in speeding up her trauma healing. Now, the truth of the matter is...
What?
So that's you agree?
Wonderful. I agree. I think you're giving this couple the opportunity to become... Well, first of all, you're giving the man an opportunity to right his own wrongs, right? That's a remarkable thing to do because, if most men in recovery have a lot of guilt and shame around this kind of behavior, when they sober up psychologically or even from a drug or something, and look at how much they hurt their wives. What are they going to do? They're either going to continue to get locked in defensiveness, or they're going to feel a lot of shame, or they're going to have to grow, right? They're going to have to grow and grow empathy and care about the other person. So, I think that's a remarkable book to have written. That's brilliant. Yeah. Of course, there's no place that one woman would rather heal than in her husband's arms, you know? Let's face it, right?
Well, yes, because so many of your books, you've written 15 of them, and so many of them either talk about grief or they talk about that attachment pain. And certainly, if we can teach men those skills, which the issue is, did they have the skills and lose them because of the sexual addiction, robbing them of being able to relate to somebody else, or did they not have them to begin with? You know, men are the greatest at relationship skills off the bat, let alone perhaps men that have had their own trauma in their childhood. And so when I was reading your bio and looking at your books, and again, this incredible gift you're giving my listening audience, maintaining emotional sobriety during COVID-19, I'm going to encourage everybody to get this, not just for COVID, but because it has life skills for how to deal with pain and trauma and stress. But my point is that men are hungry to learn these skills. And when I'm with a lot of clinicians say, sex addicts are nothing but narcissists, to be real honest, I don't get many narcissistic clients in my practice. Maybe it's because they want the empathy, or maybe it's because that narcissism is really their own protection from not knowing how to heal themselves, let alone somebody else.
Boy, your clients are lucky, Carol. They're lucky.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, really, this is a beautiful place to come from in healing. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm also, you know, as women, we have our hurt child inside of us, too. And to have our husbands get in touch with their ability to help us heal and hold not just us as a grown woman, but the child in us, right? And for us to learn to hold and see the child in our partner, because they're there too in this relationship. You know, they're there too. And if we can understand, you develop a kind of intimacy so that you can just really have fun together, you know, really have a good time because no one on the earth understands you or kind of accepts you the way they do if you come to this place in your relationship. There's a companionship, a companion ability to being together it's worth its weight in gold if you can get there. And this is, you've given a path to get there. That's really, I've never heard anyone do something from this point of view. It's really cool.
Well, thank you. It's because I do couples work, and I watched men struggle, and I knew they wanted help, and I give them the help, but I'm a believer in we all learn better when we see it, when we read it, when we hear it, and so that's why I put together the book. And I've got to tell you, my other book, I've written several, but Unleashing Your Power is for women to get to that third phase of partner betrayal called post-traumatic growth. My organization, APSAP, calls it restoration of the self, of the coupleship, or of of course, our relationship with our higher power, because when trauma happens, you question your universe and you question your God and you wonder why you were forsaken. And so many of your concepts from maintaining emotional sobriety are in my book. We are both believers that women can get to the other side. I was wondering if you could describe in your own words what post-traumatic growth is.
Well, it's a wonderful category of it's great that Martin Seligman grabbed this. He's great at grabbing concepts. You know, he was he introduced the concept of learned helplessness, right? And so that was a big concept. But then it just tore across the field, and learned helplessness is a very real phenomenon. But many years later, he came to another realization. Wait a minute. If it's learned helplessness, then why not learned optimism? Why not teach ourselves to be optimistic? So he went on another kind of crusade. It was something he called learned optimism, accessing the hope circuits in the brain, which are, by the way, you know, the same circuits we process, you know, a lot of feelings through. And this learned hopefulness is really what he's talking about. And the post-traumatic growth is, you know, Maslow did a bunch of cool material on peak experiences. So it really is, if you can see life as an adventure and you're here to learn, then you will look for silver linings. You will want to grow. And if you can take the focus off the other person and say, wait a minute, whatever is happening, this is my adventure. I'm not going to waste it, and I'm going to accept that this is in my life so that I can learn and grow. If you can do that, you will shortcut this process, the pain, by a lot. And you can't you can't ignore the pain. If you deny it, that doesn't work. But if you're willing to process it and take responsibility for your own growth, there's a lot of beautiful stuff that happens with post-traumatic growth, and it's just an increased ability to be in the present. It's a sense of being in charge of life. It's gratitude. It's recognizing, I think, the temporary nature of life. It's understanding how to process feelings and use them as grist for the mill for personal growth. It's basically growing through trauma and all that you gain. And people need to grow through something, you know? I mean, religion, when it works, is the story of loss and redemption. I mean, everybody's trying to explain a fall from grace and a return to it in some language or another. So why not, why not recovery? That's my feeling.
Well, and we may have listeners that are saying, oh, you walk in my shoes, and that's just not possible, and this is so much pain, and this is overwhelming, but truly, post-traumatic growth came from veterans who had lost their legs and arms in battle, and, they really struggled with grief and anger and sadness for so long, and then at some point they decided, you know what, this is not how I choose to live, and I am going to lick my wounds, surrender to the process, and find some good in my life. And understandably, this term was coined when people were able not only to see how it made them stronger, but also how they could give back. And I feel like that's what you have really done in your own professional career. You lived with an alcoholic father. You had your own trauma. And look what you have done with that trauma.
Well, you know what? It's interesting you say that, because I remember when I was in eighth grade, and that was when it became really clear to me that my family was no more, that whatever was going, we were on a decline, and it was falling apart, and that really kind of no one was there for me. And I remember I would take a walk to a tree, and plus there was no one to tell my pain to who wanted to hear it, so I found a tree. I've never told this story in public, but I thought of it as my crying tree, and every day I let myself climb this tree and cry for a while, because I had so many tears inside of me. And then I would sit down from the tree and say, okay, that's my crying for the day. And the next things I did was, in the 50s when I grew up, we used to ask, you know, we had this idea that if you were really sad, do something for someone else. It will make you feel better. So I believe in that. And I became a candy striper. And not only was I a candy striper, I requested to work with old people, you know. And I remember they looked at me and they said, well, no problem. No one wants to request this. So you're, you know, everybody wants some maternity ward. So yes, yes, please, thank you. And the other thing I did was start a school a little in my, you know, to make some money and to have some a good project. I started a little camp in the summer for the neighborhood children. And I made little mimeographs and put them in people's doors. And I remember thinking, I wonder if anyone will call. Well, it was full by noon that day because all the moms.
Oh, my God.
And I gave in very concrete ways. You know what I mean? I was a candy striper. I took care of kids, you know, I think five mornings a week. We put on a play together. One of my kids had cerebral palsy and came in a wheelchair. And don't ask me how, but I still could take care of them all. And I just loved this little boy. So it got me out of myself. It got me out of my pain. And, you know, all I had to do was look at this little boy, Michael, every day to know how blessed my life had been. You know, and if this boy could be brave, if his family could be brave, I could, you know. And so that, I think we have to do that. I mean, we have to. What's the other choice? I also think, you know, Carol, seeing life as a gift and having some spiritual sense of being a gift and that it's not a gift to be squandered and that if we, you know, and God, I see God as God gave me to me, right? So I should take care of me because I'm a gift that God gave me. So I can't just ignore that gift. You can't be more generous than to give someone life. So I think we have to work it till we can elevate our mind, you know. I think that's something I also don't really talk about much, but I think we have to take ownership of our own feeling state. I think in marriage that's, you know, I've been married for like almost 50 years, and at a certain point I realized that my happiness just was not my husband's responsibility. That was mine. And he sees it the same way. And that's one thing we don't ask each other to do. We know we're responsible for staying happy. And then we bring that happiness to each other. But we don't make it each other's job to elevate each other's moods. We make it our own job.
Well, and that is good emotional maturity. And that's what we're all ascribing to. And before we end, again, you've written this workbook, Maintaining Emotional Sobriety During COVID-19, but I want to ask you, what do you define as emotional sobriety?
Well, trauma, as you know, is the hallmark is dysregulation. Then I always describe it as people go from 0 to 10 and 10 to 0 with no speed bumps in between, right? We can't regulate our own emotions. So emotional sobriety is really being able to live in 4, 5, and 6. People who've been traumatized tend to slide right by 4, 5, and 6, right? They're either very shut down and withdrawn, or they're in high gear, and either end of that is a hijacking of the thinking mind. You know, you're not integrating thought and feeling in either of those edges. So emotional sobriety is thinking and feeling at the same time. It's like walking and chewing gum. You know, it's slower, but it's not boring. You know, once you get the hang of emotional sobriety, I think people who are in the addictions world start to think that's, you know, sort of boring, right? That's where life really happens. I mean, that's when you're in the moment. If you're shut down or highly intense, you're not in the moment. You're trying to get out of the moment. So emotional sobriety is walking through life with the present mind, you know, so that you can, if a feeling comes up, you can not either shut it down or rev it up. You can experience it and translate it into language, into observation, so that you can actually feel it and get to the next feeling. Or you're with somebody else, and you can actually be with them. You can hear what they're saying to you or trying to say to you, and let it roll around your mind a little bit and respond not just to a sentence floating disembodied in the air, but to them. Try to, you know, read them. You're just more present and available, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
It learns to manage emotions.
Well, and you know so much. I want to remind our listening audience that you are a senior fellow at the Meadows, a premier addiction facility that both provides workshops and intensives and treatment through residential living. And I would highly recommend
it.
Anybody
provide? Can I throw in a little? I've created two programs, one called Mending Heart Wounds for Processing Grief and another called Thrive, which is, you know, if you want to work on forgiveness, if you want to work on post-traumatic growth, if you want to process some pain but towards, you know, movement out of it, if you want to just do a recovery reset, you know, they're five-day programs and they're all psychodrama, but they're guided, you know, they're programmed. And I'm a huge fan of five-day programs because I think for people like me, that's where I started, you know, in the mid-80s with a five-day program, and it really changed my life. So that's why I wanted to do those for Rio Retreat, because I know they can change your life, you know?
Wow. Okay, so again, that's at the Meadows. So if our listening audience wants information about that, they can go to www.meadowsb.h.com and look at the programming. Look for Dr. Dayton's programs. And they're, again, called what and what?
Mending Heart Wounds. If you just say the grief program by Jan Dayton, or Thrive.
Okay.
And that one's Jan Dayton, too. If you just say my name, there are two programs I've done. And I love them.
Well, I tell our listening audience that's TIAN, because I don't think I've ever met a TN. So that's TIAN,
it's,
and then Dayton
is my full name. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it has been a pleasure to talk to you. We are two kindred souls. I can tell it already. I'm going to send you my books so you can take a look at them.
Yeah,
I'll send
you mine too. Yeah,
excellent.
I'd love to see
them, Carol. Well, and if you remember, I was telling the audience before you came on, you were giving philosophical statements / ideas / slogans.
The affirmations? Yeah.
Yes. I loved them so much. I said, I want to find her. I've got to have her on. That's all about post-traumatic growth, and it's a reminder to people that their power lies within. And so thank you so much for sharing your power with our listening audience to have their power. I so appreciate it, and I hope to have you back on again.
Love to come, Carol. Thank you for having me.
Okay, I'm not CNN, and I'm not NBC, but we would love to have you, and I look forward to talking to you further. Make it a great week, and I know you will.
Same to you. I'll see you again. Talk again.
Okay, bye-bye. So again, if you want that free resource, go to www.meadowsb.h.com/COVID-19 and another / why not get a free resource, right? That's what we're all about here at APSEC. giving you free resources. And thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week for hopefully more information on how you can grow out of this and into yourself, because you deserve it, here at Betrayal Recovery Radio.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.